The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha is Parshas Maaseh. In Parshas Maaseh, beginning with Perek Lamed Hei Posuk Tes, the Torah deals with Shfichas Domim, the taking of an innocent life, murder. It's important for a Jew, extremely important, to realize the value of human life, how the Torah looks towards a human life. This is a subject that we've spoken on several times in the past, and it's a subject which is very, very long. This evening, let's dwell on a few points relating to this. From this parasha, we see that the Torah takes a very strong stand when it comes to the loss of an innocent life and anything that might cause this. And amongst the principles which are mentioned, we can extract four very important principles. Firstly, the Ritzeach B'Mezid, someone who kills with intent and malice. The Torah tells us in Posuk Tes Zayin, V'im b'chli varzel hi kohu v'yomeis Ritzeach hu. If he shall kill his friend with a steel instrument, the yomes, and the person that he strikes dies from this. If he strikes his friend with a steel instrument and the person who he strikes dies, then he's a ritzeach, then he's a murderer. Meishu ma'as ritzeach, and the murderer shall be surely be put to death. And then the Torah continues, v'im be'evin yod asher yomos bo'ikov v'yomes ritzeachu. If he strikes him with a stone, or if he strikes him with a wooden object, and it's capable of killing, and he does kill him, then he's a ritzeach. And meishu ma'as ritzeach, he shall surely be put to death. That's one principle. A second principle is the ritzeach b'shegik, someone who kills not with malice and not with intent, but through error. This the Torah deals with in Posuk Chof Beis. V'im bepesa b'lei eva hadofe, and if just by a coincidence or without malice, he happened to push him. Oh, hishli cholov, kol kli b'leitz dio, or he threw upon him any type of instrument without premeditation. Ivacholov even asher yomus bei b'leireis, or any stone which fell on him without him realizing it. Vayapel alov vayomos, and he killed him. V'hula ayev lei v'leimavakish rosei, and this was not, he was not an enemy of his, and he was not seeking to do him harm. Then the Torah tells us, "V'shoftu eido b'namaku v'engel hadom." The congregation, the Beis Din, must save here this man from the gel hadom, from the nearest kin who wants to revenge his kinship's death. And he shall go to the ir miklote asher noshoma. He shall go to one of the cities of refuge, v'yoshav boi ad meis hakein hagadol. And he shall dwell in that city until the death of the high priest, Asher Moshach Ba'esei B'Shemen HaKodesh, who was anointed with the Shemen HaKodesh. And the reason for this is because Rashi brings that it's, even though he killed without intent and without malice, but nevertheless, he has caused Shvichas Domim, he has caused the spilling of blood in Israel. And therefore, he needs an atonement. And his atonement and his punishment is that he is exiled to one of the cities of refuge. And this also is a protection for him, because as long as he's there, then the family cannot of the dead cannot harm him. And he must stay there until the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, dies, because the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, he is the one who brought the sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash was just contrary to loss of innocent life, because the Beis HaMikdash brought Arichas Yomim, brought long life to Klal Yisrael, and therefore this act was contrary to the Kohen Gadol. And therefore the Torah says that it's not right that he should live together with the Kohen Gadol, and therefore he must stay in the city of refuge until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Another point that we see in relation to this is that a metal instrument, the Torah considers a lethal instrument, almost under all circumstances. Not so with other materials. And in the Beis Hamikdash, we were commanded that when we built the altar, we should not cut the stones with any metal instrument. Because the altar came to bring life to the world, and metal is a lethal instrument which brings death. So the two were contrary. That's the second principle that we see from this parsha. A third very important principle is that we are obligated to judge very carefully in the case of an accused murderer. We cannot merely assume that he's a murderer. We cannot take the law into our own hands. But having mesunim bidin, we must judge with great deliberation, great care, and great patience before we can properly convict the murderer. And this the Torah tells us in Posuk Yud Beis. You shall make cities of refuge where the accused murderer can go, in order that the murderer shall not be put to death until he stands before the courts for a fair trial. And then the Torah continues in Posuk Chof Dalet, in Posuk Lamed. Vishoftu ha'edo ben hamake uven gel adom ala mishpotim ha'ele, and the congregation is obligated to judge very carefully between the accused and between his accusers. Vitzilo ha'edo esaretzeach miyad gel adom, and we are commanded to save. The congregation is commanded to save the murderer, the accused, from the hands of the Goel Hadam, from the hands of the family of the murdered, if at all possible. From here we learn that the Beis Din must try to find a schus. They must try to find some merit, endeavor to save him. And then the Torah states in Posuk Lamed, Kol Maki Nefesh Lefi Edim Yirtzach Esoretzeach, anyone who kills and there are two witnesses present, then he shall be convicted. But but one witness will not be acceptable. We must have two witnesses, and the two witnesses must be objective, they must be qualified people, they must be upright people, kosher eidus, upright citizens who are Torah law abiding, and they are interrogated, and only after it is certain beyond a doubt that the accused is guilty, then we have a right to execute the punishment. One witness is not accepted. If any of the witnesses are relatives to anyone involved in the issue, also they are not accepted. So this is a third principle. A fourth principle that we learn from this parsha is that we are not allowed to be marachim. Once a person is convicted, then we are not allowed to show compassion to the murderer. We are obligated to show compassion to the accused. We are obligated to show compassion to the accused before he's convicted. But once he's convicted, then we are not allowed to show compassion to the murderer. But since he has taken an innocent life, then the law must be executed. And this we see in Posuk Lamed Aleph. V'leisichu kefele nefesh retzeach asher urosh alomus. You shall not take ransom for the life of the retzeach, since he is liable for the death punishment. Kimeishu mos, he shall surely be put to death. And someone who kills without malice, and his punishment is to go to the city of refuge, you also shall not accept a ransom for him. You also should not accept a ransom from him in order that he should escape this punishment. But he must go to that city until the death of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. These are the four principles that we learn from this parsha. The one who murders with malice and intent, the one who murders without malice but through error, that we must judge the accused very, very carefully with a full qualified bezdin and trial. And once he is convicted, then we are not allowed to be merachem, we are not allowed to show compassion on the convicted. These four principles have become principles in civilized countries all over the world, all throughout history. And they were taken from the Torah. And these principles here are given to Klal Yisrael specifically, but generally these principles were also given to the Bnei Noach, to the sons of Noach. Unfortunately, great distortions and malpractices have entered into the civilized countries for many, many centuries. And even though they might talk about these principles really do not exist in practice. And because of that, we have a situation where we live in a society, referring to the entire world, a society which is based on bloodshed, on needless wars, on violent crimes, on anarchy, organized crime, terrorism, and whatnot. This is the type of civilization that we find ourselves living in, and this has existed for a long, long time. Let's elaborate a little more on these principles this evening, and we can see the difference Bain Yisrael Amin. The difference is in which the Torah views this and commanded Yisrael, and how actually this is carried out by the nations of the world. In regards to the first principle, the one who kills with intent and malice, the Rambam brings in Hilchos Reseach Ushmiras HaNefesh, Perek Aleph, whoever kills another person, Kol Hareg Nefesh Ben Odom, Eivu B'Leis Haser, he transgresses a negative commandment, as it states, Leitirtzoch, you shall not kill. This negative commandment, incidentally, is one of the commandments which are in the Aseres Hadibros, the Ten Commandments. If he does kill with intent, and there are witnesses, two witnesses present, and with Hasra, the law is that he must have Hasra, he must have proper warning to make sure that he knows, he's cognizant of what he's doing, and still he kills, then he is liable for the death penalty by the sword. As it states, Nokoim Yinokim, that you shall surely take revenge, and the Gemara learns out this is the death penalty by the sword. A second halacha. Incidentally, before we go to the second halacha, here we see that the Torah very clearly gives us its viewpoint on capital punishment. Capital punishment, it is a discussion. South Africa has capital punishment. Many nations in the world have abolished it. They feel it's inhumane. The Torah very clearly states that a murderer must be put to death. And as we'll see later, it states that the land will not be cleansed from the great sin and disgrace of innocent blood until the murderer is put to death. So it's very clear cut, the viewpoint of capital punishment. This, though, is only when we had our bote dinim, our court system, which had the full authority, see, in regards to Israel itself, the full authority to carry out all laws of the Torah. A second halacha, which is very interesting, mitzvah biyad gel adam lahariges haretzeach. Once he's convicted, the mitzvah is given over to the closest relative of the victim to carry out the penalty of execution. As it states in our Seder, Geil Adam hu yomis esaretzeach, the closest kin, he is the one who shall execute this penalty. This is the mitzvah, this is the priority. And the closest one, when it comes to inheritance, is considered the closest kin. If he does not want to do this, or for some reason he cannot, then the Beis Din, the courts, carry out this law. There is no difference if the closest kin is a male or female, Zohar or Nekeva. The mitzvah, the first instance, is on the Geil Hadam. Umuzorin bezdin shalelikach kefer min aretzeach. The courts are commanded and they are cautioned not to take a ransom from the murderer, even if he will give all of the money in the world, and even if the family of the victim pardons the murderer, like we see many times, the family comes along and they say that we pardon you, still we are commanded that we are not allowed to take any ransom from the murderer or from his family to free the murderer. Why? She nafshi shel ze anera kinyan geil adam, ela kinyan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because who are they to pardon? They didn't own the victim. The life of the victim was owned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the Almighty. And the Almighty has very clearly stated, Leisichu kefel enefesh retzeach, that you shall not accept any ransom. If he was owned by the family, for example, like when it comes to momen, when it comes to money matters, if you damage someone else's money, he can waive his rights against you because it's his money. But if you kill a relative of his, so who's he to waive the rights against you? He wasn't owned by the family. His life is owned by the Almighty, and the Almighty has refused to waive any rights. And there is nothing in the entire Torah that we find that the Torah was so stringent against as the spilling of innocent blood. As it states, Leisach nifu es ha'oretz, that you shall not bring impurity, you shall not bring wickedness into the land. Ki hadam hu yachnif es ha'oretz, blood is what brings this into the land. So this is in regards to the one who kills with malice, and his penalty is given over formally to the courts. We see again very clearly the Torah's attitude towards capital punishment, and we see again very clearly the Torah's attitude towards leniency when it comes to murder in the first degree, where he is proven to be such a murderer. There are certain types of murder. Excuse me. Who must be the victim? in order to classify a person as a murderer in the first degree? Is there a certain minimal age of the victim? Is there a certain maximal age of the victim? Is there a certain health condition of the victim? Is there a difference if the victim was a male or female? The Rambam brings, incidentally, whatever the Rambam brings is has sources in the Mishnah in the Gemara. The Rambam brings in Perek Beis, Halacha Vov and Zayin, Echor Ha'ereg as a Godel as a Kotten Ben Yema. There is no difference if the victim is an adult or if the victim is a child in his first day. A child that's born and born normally and is in the first day of his life. That means even 1 hour or 1 minute old, and someone kills him, then that person is a murderer in the first degree. From here we see that age has no bearing on the value of human life in relation to constituting who is a murderer. Bein zocher, bein nekeva. Whether the victim is a male or a female. So here we see that the sex of the victim has no bearing on the value of human life when it comes to constituting who is a murderer in the first degree. Hareza neregolov im horak bezodin. If the murderer was with malice and intent, then he's guilty of the death penalty. If it was in error, then he would be guilty of going, of being exiled into the city of refuge. Echor ha'ayreg as a body, or as a chela netelomus, v'afil horag as a geisus neregolov. There's no difference if the victim was healthy. There's no difference if the victim was sick. There's no difference if the victim was a handicapped person. There is no difference even if the victim is very old or very sick and is dying, a natural death. Now, here again we see that when it comes to the quality of life, we cannot say that this person is in the prime of his age and this person is very, very old and this person is very sick and this person is weak. Because life, in the eyes of the Torah, is measured by minutes and measured by seconds. Every minute and every second is a life. And someone else that takes that life is a murderer. Now, here we're speaking where someone even is very sick and he's certainly dying. He's dying a natural death. If someone is injured, then we come into legal complications. If someone is injured, or if, for example, if someone is born with an abnormality, a great abnormality that he will not be capable of living with, then we come into other complications, which under no conditions are we allowed to destroy such a person. But there are many questions then in the Gemara whether that constitutes murder in the first degree or murder in the second degree. There is another category of a murderer who murders with malice and with intent, but due to circumstances, the courts are not allowed to execute his punishment. What is this? This is what is known as a Retzeach B'mezid Shelei Nitan L'Mises Bezdim. For example, in Perek Beis, the Rambam brings in Perek Beis Halocha Aleph that someone who kills actually by himself, this is a murderer. Aval Haseicher Heireg La'areg Es HaChaveron. But if you hire someone to kill for you, or shisholach avodim bahargu, or if you send your servant to kill, this is very relevant to organized crime, where many times they don't commit the murder themselves, but they commit it through intermediaries. Or another, so this is a case where the person caused a murder, but he did not murder himself. Another example is a person who does not kill outright, but he kills only through an indirect cause. A groma, for example, he ties up another person and he leaves him in the bush or in the field where he knows that the animals will come and kill him. Another case, Hahariges Atzma, someone who kills himself. Kol Echon Me'elu, all of these cases are Sheikh Domin. The Rambam writes, you should not make any mistake, all of these cases are murderers. Whether he murdered through another intermediary, or whether he murdered through an indirect cause, or whether he murdered himself, these are all Sheikh Domin, these are all murderers. And they are guilty of the transgression of murder. And heaven will deal to them their penalties. But ain't when Mrs. Besdin. The courts have no authority to kill these people. The courts only have the authority to kill when someone kills in the first degree, which means when he kills actually by himself and through himself. But in these cases, the courts do not have the authority to kill the person. But the Rambam writes, don't make a mistake to think they're not murderers. They're all Shefik Domim, and they will receive their punishment through Shemai, through heaven, because they have, with malice and intent, taken a human life. But this is what is known as Leinit L'Mishis Bezdin. Their punishment is not given over to the hands of the people, to the hands of the courts. What do we do with people like this? Incidentally, from here we see Torah's viewpoint towards suicide. That if a person, heaven forbid, takes his own life, if he's not of proper mind, then he cannot be held responsible for his actions. But if he's of proper mind and he takes his own life, then heaven forbid, he is a Shefek Domin. He is a murderer. Because life belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and life was given to man to use. And if he destroys it, then he is in the category of Shfichas Domim, of murder. Now, what do we do with these other people? Do we just let them off scot-free, since we're not allowed to kill them? Or is there some type of action that we can take? Now, the Torah did not leave any loopholes in the law. Today, it's very common in civilized countries that if someone kills or someone commits a crime, and on a technicality, you cannot convict him, so then he goes cut-free. Or, if the penalty was supposed to be death, he'll get off with a light prison term, and soon he'll be out on parole and back on the streets. And this is common, and you hear this over and over. Or, through technicalities, many times he can clog up the court system, where the court systems of the democracies of the world can go on endlessly, and the person is never brought to justice. With proper lawyers and enough money and enough influence, it's because of this that you have many, many criminals back in the street, and mafia and organized crime. The Torah does not allow such a situation. Even though we are not allowed to kill these people outright, the halacha of the law is as follows. Kol el haratzchonim, all of these murderers, Im rotze melech Yisrael lohorge bedina malchus v'katakonos ha'elam ha'rashus biyodeh. Israel had a king, and the king was given special powers. And if the king saw that it was necessary for this particular time to bring these people to justice and to kill them, then he had a right to order their execution. Since it was proven what they did, except they're being freed on a technicality, he has a right to order their execution. If he chooses not to do so, he didn't feel it was necessary. This prerogative is given also to the high courts. Imro bezdin lahog beirosho, if the court saw that at this particular time there was a need to take a strong hand because life was becoming cheap in the eyes of the people, then also permission was granted to them to order the execution of these people. What would be if the king didn't order their execution and also the courts didn't? We still do not let them go off scot-free. The courts are obligated to physically, to corporally punish them with severe punishments, to lock them up for many, many years, and to oppress them with all types of oppressions, in order that a fear and a terror should go out into the world on all of the Rishoyim, on all of the wicked people, that they shouldn't think that I have a friend or I have an enemy that I want to get rid of, and here's a way I can do it and still become free. So we see actually the Torah didn't believe in terrorism, except it wasn't a case where the guilty terrorized the innocent, but rather the innocent terrorized the guilty. That it's the obligation of the courts that when there's a murderer, he must be put to death. If he's freed on a technicality, then the king has a right to put him to death. If the king chooses not so, then the courts, as an extraordinary move, have a right to do so. If they also choose not to do, then still they're obligated to corporally punish him and to lock him up and to oppress him for many, many years, in order that a terror should go out to all of the criminals. So in other words, the Torah here is drawing a picture of a society where the guilty live in terror of the law. Not that the innocent live in terror of the guilty. Where the guilty are afraid to walk the streets. See? Not where the innocent are afraid to walk the streets. We have another such case also. In Perek Dalet Halacha Ches and Tes, what would happen if a witness, if you had two witnesses, and the two witnesses clearly saw the man kill, and the trial took place, and to the satisfaction of all of the judges, the accused was guilty. However, one of the witnesses was disqualified on a technicality. Or, for example, the law of the Torah is that both witnesses must see together. One witness was in one building and he saw from the window what took place, and another witness was in another building and he saw from another window what took place. And the Torah has decreed that these are not qualified witnesses for murder in the first degree. They must see together. So there's no doubt left in the minds of all of the judges. Incidentally, the trial, according to the law of the Torah, was a trial by judges, not by jury. And there was no doubt left in the minds of the judges that the accused is guilty. But they could not pronounce his guilt because of a technicality. One of the witnesses was disqualified on a technicality and so forth. Here also the same halacha applies. We can't let him go scot-free because he's a murderer. We cannot kill him, but we oppress him. We lock him up. We physically punish him, in order that a terror should go out to the world what it means an innocent life. Then the Rambam writes something which is very interesting. This is a step that we never take in regards to any other laws of the Torah. in all of the laws of the Torah, if he's guilty, we give him his punishment. If he's not guilty, we free him. Only here do we take this step. Even though there are avedas, there are discretions in the Torah which are more severe than the spilling of blood, but ein behen ashkosish yishuvay shel elam kishvichas domim. But there is nothing so destructive to society and to civilization than that of spilling of blood. Even avedas zora, even idolatry, or even incest and adultery, or even the desecration of Shabbos, no matter how severe those avedas might be, but they do not destroy society and civilization, the structure of society and civilization, as shfichas domim, as the spilling of innocent blood. Because those avedas are avedas between Odom Lamokim. Those avedas are between man and the Almighty. And the spilling of innocent blood is between man and his fellow man. And the avedas between man and his fellow man are more severe. And whoever has this aveda in his hands, he is a Rosh Gomer. He is a Rosh, a definitely wicked person, and all of the mitzvahs that he will do his during his life will not save him from the deen, from the judgment. Therefore, by all other laws of the Torah, the Beis Din is obligated either to execute the proper judgment or free the man. By Shfichas Domim, even where they cannot execute the proper judgment, they are not allowed to free the man if he's a murderer. But they must deal with him then in other ways. Because this is the greatest destructive force to the structure of a free society and a free civilization. Here we see also the Torah's viewpoint when it comes to a strong or weak government, when it comes to an anarchy, or what people believe, many people believe democracy means no government, anarchy. But the Torah was very adamant that the law must be upheld under all situations, in order that the innocent should be the ones who receive protection from the law, not the accused. In regards to the Retzeach B'Shegeg that we learned from the Parsha, someone who kills through error, Rambam brings in Perikei, whoever kills through error, then he is exiled from these province which he lives in to one of the cities of refuge. This is a positive commandment, as it states that he shall go there until the death of the high priest. And as we mentioned, the courts are cautioned that they shall not receive it, take any ransom from this person to free him. But he must live out his stay. He must stay in the city until the death of the Kohen Gadol. Now how do we define what does it mean to kill an error? What is it considered an error? And this is very important for us today, because even though we don't have Ori Miklat, we don't have cities of refuge, and the law in practice is not relevant, but still we have to know how far is a Jew held responsible for his actions. If heaven forbid that he should cause death or injury to another person. In Perek Vov, Halacha Gimel Dalet and Vov, in Ches, the Rambam brings the Gemara where there are three categories. There is one category of a Shegeg Korev Lemezid, where a person kills through error, but it's korev lemezid. There was negligence. He killed an error, but there was negligence involved. This is not the error we are speaking about. This is not considered a shagig, this is considered a pshia, a negligence. And in such a case, the law is that he cannot go to the city of refuge, because he does not deserve the protection of the city of refuge, and also it will not atone for his sin. But he will need a greater atonement, and his atonement will be Mishamayim, from heaven. There's a second category where someone kills through error, and the error was close to being an onus, circumstances beyond one's control. In such a case, he also does not go to the city of refuge, because this is not considered a transgression at all. Since it was circumstances beyond one's control, then it's not considered a transgression, and therefore there is no need for him to go to the city of refuge. Which case are we speaking about? The third case, where it's neither a negligence, or is it circumstances beyond one's control? The example the Gemara gives, if you're standing in a building and you throw, if you're standing on the 30th floor or the 20th floor of a building, and you take a heavy object and throw it out the window, and people are walking below you, and you strike someone and you kill him. This is not the Heirig B'Shegig. This is not the one who kills in error. This is Korel Reizit. This is very close to first degree murder. It's total negligence. Therefore, he cannot go to the city of refuge. If a person is in an isolated place where people never and ever come, or for example, it's an area where they make doing construction, and they've roped off the entire area, and they've put up signs, and they put up guards saying, people, stay out of this area because of danger. And someone walks in, and meanwhile a workman throws something off a high window, and it strikes the person and kills him. This is Korav La'enis. This is something which are circumstances beyond one's control, and this is not considered a transgression. So what then is the case? If it's an isolated place, the Gemara says, well, for example, people walk there during the day but never at night. So someone threw something into that place at night. And as it happened, someone walked there at night, and the object struck him and killed him. So this, the Gemara says, is not court of the Pshia. This we cannot judge as negligence, because people never go there at night. On the other hand, we cannot judge this as something, circumstances beyond one's control, because it is a place where people go. They go during the day. This is the Shegig. This is the error which we are speaking about. And in such a case, he will need a kapora, he will need atonement, and he goes to the city of refuge. This has great relevance to us. Many people think that, what are these laws relevant to us? We don't have the court system today, and we don't have the capital punishment today, and we don't have the punishment of the cities of refuge. First of all, the Gemara tells us, "Afal gav shebotlu arba miseis, din mise lebotle." That even though we do not have the courts to execute all of the punishments, but the punishments still exist, because heaven will execute them. This is what the Gemara tells us. During the time of the courts will execute them. But during the time when there are no courts, then heaven will execute them. And it states, Harbei Shluchim Lamokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many, many messengers. So we must realize the law. Secondly, what is very, very relevant today is, we, unfortunately, not unfortunately, but tragically, our civilization, and here very tragically, we're not referring to the nations, we're referring to Jews also, kill innocent people all of the time on the roads, on the highways. All of the time. I cannot begin to tell you how many funerals or houses of Shiva, of mourning, that I personally have been at, of a victim of a traffic accident, leaving a broken widow or a broken husband or orphans or whatnot. And if a person is driving along the road, if he's under the influence of alcohol, or if the speed limit is 60 kilometers, and he's so arrogant that he thinks that what he's doing is more important than other people's lives, and therefore he has a right to drive 70 kilometers, and he kills someone, that's not the Heirig B'Shegig. That's not the killing and shaking that the Torah says you go to the city of refuge. And that the Torah says that the city of refuge will not atone. That's korev lemezid. That's almost first degree murder. There's a tremendous element of negligence. And you see people going over the speed limit because of things that they consider very, very important. They might be late for the movie. They might not get to the store in time, which takes precedence over human life. That's not what we're speaking about. If a person is driving along in his car, and he takes good care of his car, checks it regularly, and all of a sudden there's a steering failure or a brake failure, and heaven forbid something happens, that's the korev la'enus. That's considered circumstances beyond one's control, and he cannot be held responsible for it. But if he's driving along within the speed limit, and he's involved in an accident, and heaven forbid someone is killed, and there was not negligence, but had he been more careful, he could have avoided it. It was within the speed limit. But you know, the speed limit is not a mitzvah saseh, it's not a positive commandment. I don't know in this country, but in America, that has a very, very good driving record, there they tell you, speed limits don't mean anything. You have to drive a safe speed. This is what's in all the driving manuals. A speed limit is a maximum amount. Here on South African roads, people drive the maximum amounts, whether they're the only one on the road or whether the road is congested. In America, you're obligated to drive a safe speed. And they can fine you even if you're within the speed limit. If you're not driving a safe speed, then you have to assess. If you're too close behind the next car, the law is that you must be a car length for every 10 miles per hour following behind the next car. That means if you're doing 40 miles an hour, you must be four car lengths, four American car lengths. The law is you're not allowed, you could be ticketed, you could be fined from changing lanes. You get in one lane and you stay there. If you want to pass, you go into the passing lane and you get back into your lane. And there are patrol cars patrolling all of the highways. And if you go from lane to lane, you'll have a car all of a sudden with a little siren telling you, pull over, buddy. And in America, that on your license, they write down what the discrepancy was. And if you get too many, then the judge tells you, you walk. Your license is expelled. And you start walking. Now, if a person is driving along, and had he been more cautious, he could have avoided it. This, the Torah says, Retzeachu, he's a murderer. This is not a joking matter when everybody gets into the car and they drive without any brains. The Torah says, Retzeachu, he's a murderer. He's not a murderer in the first degree because he didn't do it with malice and with intent, but a murderer he is. And he needs atonement. And the Torah says even further that he has to be exiled during the time when we had the entire court systems. He would have to be exiled from his home and go to the city of refuge until the death of the Kohen Gadol. And if he left the city of refuge and a relative of the victim would kill him in cold blood, the law is the courts would not be allowed to do anything to that relative. This is the Torah law. This is not a joking matter. What makes this even more tragic is that according to statistics published by the South African Automobile Association, South Africa and Israel have the most tragic driving records in the world. Of all of the industrial nations. And there are 6 to 7 times more accidents in South Africa per car per driven mile than the United States. This is according to the records of the Automobile Association. In other words, South Africans are the worst drivers of all of the industrial nations in the world. And I can tell you that they are. Because I, coming from America, can tell you that 70% of South African drivers would be walking in America. And what's even more tragic, that this should be a blemish in Israel. There have been movements lately. There have been movements, nationwide movements in Eretz Israel to do something about it. There have been organizations to stop the bloodshed. It was recently published in the papers. I think it stated that there were more people killed on the roads than South Africans killed who participated in the Second World War. There's been organized movements. But this is not a joking matter, and this is something which comes from these halachos, from the Sedra. There are many other points. If we want to get a definition or an attitude from the Torah as to what the value of life is, which we would have to go into, which we do not have time at all this evening, just to make mention of them. One is that there are times that the Torah permitted a person, not only permitted, but obligated a person to take the law into his own hands and to kill a person. And that's where a murder is being attempted. That if you happen on a situation where A is attempting to kill B, we are obligated by the law of the Torah to do everything possible to save the innocent life. And if not, then we transgress the law of the Torah. Naturally, if we can save him without killing him, then we are obligated to. But not only we're permitted, we're obligated. As it states, Leisamer al dam reyecho, you are not allowed to stand by the blood of your fellow man. And the same applies if he's in danger, if he's being drowning, or if he's in other types of danger. From here we see that not only does the Torah value human life, but also involvement. That we are obligated to become involved. Today there's a great discussion that goes on. How much should one become involved with other people? Here the law is that if a fellow Jew is in danger, we are obligated by the Torah to even kill if necessary in order to save the other person's life. Another point is brought by an embryo, a fetus. If a woman is giving birth and the doctors declare that she will not give birth because the embryo, the fetus, is endangering her life, then the Rambam brings that this fetus has a law of Aradif. He becomes like an attempted murderer. And therefore the fetus must be destroyed. That's before it's born. Before it reaches the air of the world. From here we see that a fetus is also a life. And we must have a justification where it's a raid, if it's an attempted murderer of the mother, in order to destroy it. But otherwise it's a life. We not have no right to destroy it. The nations of the world today, unfortunately, not only by the other nations, the abortions go into the hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Another law, another entire chapter, if a dead person is found and we do not know who killed him, There's a communal responsibility then. The judges have to come and they have to bring a sacrifice. And they have to say that we did not have any involvement in the killing of this person. They need atonement. Since a dead person was found in your city or near your city. Another halacha. This was very relevant during the war. That if someone will, if you can save your life by killing someone else, the din is yehoreg v'al yavor. You have to be killed. If A will tell you, A will tell B, kill C, or I will kill you, the law is you must be killed. You have no right to take an innocent life, even to save your own life. This was relevant, unfortunately, tragically, during the Second World War, where many Jews were put into such a position, Yimach Shimon, by the Nazis, where they were forced to kill other Jews. Otherwise, they themselves would be put to death. Another very great halacha, which we gain a great insight from, is that number does not matter here. Number has no significance. If people will come and lay siege to a city, and they say, give us one man and we will kill him, or else we will kill the entire city, the halacha is Yomusu kulam, v'al yimsru nefesh achas miYisrael. The whole city must die. We have no right to give away one life. So we see number here has no significance when it comes to the value of human life. Then there is another entire chapter which deals with accidental causes to murder. For example, if you have something dangerous on your property, if you have a dangerous roof that does not have a proper fence around it, it's a roof that people use, or if you have a swimming pool that is not properly guarded, or if you have weapons on your property that are not properly cared for, or if you have dangerous animals on your property, wild dogs, which are becoming a problem in Johannesburg today. All of these are brought in the Gemara, and they involve several negative and positive commandments. A positive commandment of Vosisa Makila Gagecho, that you shall make a fence around your roof or other dangerous places. A negative commandment, Leisosim Domim Beveisecho, that you will be held responsible for any bloodshed that happens on your property because you did not care for your property, you did not guard. And the Rambam brings Isom Elecho Ushmo Nafshecho, that you must guard yourself very carefully. And from here, the Chazal, the sages, go into great length how one must be very careful of his own health. They made many decrees, many, many decrees. For example, that in the days when snakes were very common, they were not allowed, we were not allowed to drink from water or from liquids which were not properly covered. Or we were not allowed to eat an animal which has a snake bite in him or another type of injury, even though he might be a kosher animal. There are many, many Mishnayis and Gemaras and Rambams on all of this. How one must guard, go to great extreme to guard his health. And then there is another area which Rashi brings from the Gemara in Yevamos, Rashi brings in Parshas Noach. In Tess, Halacha, in Tess, Perek Tess, Posuk Vov, where the Torah says, Shefech damo odem bodem domi yishofech, that if a person kills, he must be put to death. Vatem pru urvu. Then it states that you shall be fruitful and multiply and fill up the land. What does one have to do with the other? So Rashi brings from the Gemara in Yevamos, lahakish perivyo l'shvichas domi, to join the two subjects, that whoever abstains from procreation, from bringing children into the world, the Torah considers him as a shefech domim, as someone who is shedding blood. Because every potential soul is a potential life. And if he is not brought into the world, then this also is a destruction of innocent life. That also is in the gather of Shvichas Domin. These are all very great subjects. And one other point, which I think is very important to mention, and that is, the Rambam brings in Hilchos Chevil. Now this is not referring to Shvichas Domin, to actual killing, but it's referring to physical injury. The Rambam brings in Perekei of Chevil Umazik, also Lodom Lachbo. A man is not allowed to commit physical injury, bein bi'atzmi, bein b'chaveri, to himself or to his friend. A person is not allowed to injure himself or his friend. And anyone who strikes an innocent Jew, whether he's a young person, a minor, or an older person, whether he's a man or a woman, derech nitzoyin, if he strikes him with malice, hareza eva b'leisase, he transgresses a negative commandment, as it states, la'yesim la'hakesei. When the person who was guilty was brought into Bezdin and he was given corporal punishment, so the Torah said that we're not allowed to add to the amount which is assessed to him. So if to the guilty we're not allowed to add and we transgress a negative commandment, then to the innocent, how much more so? Afilu lahagbia yodi al chaveri, osur. And even to raise your hand to strike a fellow Jew is also forbidden. And whoever raises his hand to strike a fellow Jew, even though he does not strike him, he's a rosho. He can be called a rosho. He's a wicked person until he does tshuva. The Hagos Maimonides brings here that he has a din rosho. This is not just something theoretical. He has a din rosho, which means that he wouldn't be kosher for edus. A person raised his hand to strike a fellow Jew, and he would appear in court as a witness, he's disqualified. We couldn't accept him until he did tshuva. And not only that, but in the old days during the time of the court system, that Goz Maimonides brings that the Chazan HaKnesses, in other words, the Shamas of the Beis HaKnesses, would announce it in the shuls that this person is a Rosha. Because he raised his hand to strike someone. He raised his hand to hurt another Jew. Then the Rambam brings in a David Mazik Havera Begufel Mazik Bemeino. You cannot compare someone who strikes his friend physically to someone who harms his possessions. Because if you harm your friend's possessions, once you pay for it, then it's finished. But if you strike your friend, even though you pay everything that you have to, and that you have to pay Chamisha Dvorim, you have to pay five different payments, five different reimbursements. But he's not forgiven. Even if he will bring all of the sacrifices in the world, the Rambam says, he will not be forgiven until the victim has forgiven him. So he has to ask the victim for forgiveness. This also is a very, very important halacha. So here we see somewhat what it means, a human life. The reason for this, why the Torah has such great admiration and has protected human life in such a way is because the Torah tells us. The Torah tells us why. In Parashat Vayikra it states, where we quoted before, Shefech dam ha'odom ba'odom domi yishofech ki betzelem elekim oso eso odom. The murderer shall be put to death because I have made man in my image. What does it mean that man was made in the Almighty's image? It's a great topic, which again we don't have time. Only perhaps just to make a very short mention. The Maral brings in Masechta Oves and Perek Gimel Mishnah Yud Dalet Choviv Odom Shenivra Betzelem, that man was given a great endearment because he was created in the image of the Almighty. The Almighty doesn't have an image, but all of his attributes that he has, he gave them to man in the form of a physical image. For example, the Almighty is the king of the world, and he made man the king of this world. This is what it states in the Torah. And if you'll ask a child to draw a picture of a king, he would draw someone who is tall and straight. Then if you would ask a child to draw a picture of servants, he would draw people who are bent over, bowing down. Kodesh Baruch Hu is a king. This attribute of kingship, of Malchus, he formed in man physically. That's why man walks upright. And all of the creations walk on all fours. Because it states, Urdu b'digas hayom, you shall rule the world. This physical world of ours. And all of his attributes are physically molded into man. And that's why it's possible that if you have great wisdom and you study the human being, you can understand the Almighty from there. And the Gemara says this was on Avraham Avinu. Avraham didn't have the Torah, and he understood the Almighty because he studied his creation. He stakled the biro, he looked into the palace, and from there he recognized the creator of the palace. Also, a light descended upon man's face. Man has a radiance, and this radiance is part of the image of the Almighty. And we see that this radiance is on man as long as he lives. The instant he dies, his face goes pale because the tzelem leaves him. Also, we see that the instant he dies, he falls. Ki lecho tichra kol berach. Every knee shall bend to me. Zu yema miso. This is the day of the person's death, because his malchus, his kingship, has ended in this world. And the Gemara says that the radiance of man, really the Maral writes, that every creation of the Almighty, as long as it lives, has a radiance. And this we find by animals and we find by plants. There's a great difference when it's living and when it's not living. But it's just a degree. The full radiance was given to man. And this radiance was given only to man. And the greatest degree was given to those that he gave 613 mitzvahs to. To Klal Yisrael. The Gemara tells us, Eig melech haboshon meis tzorech l'shemrei min ha'achborim. Og, who was the great and mighty giant, when he dies, you have to guard him from the rodents. Tinek ben yei mechai, but a child that's one day old, that's alive, you don't have to guard from the rodents. Because this image is man's kingship, and the kingship casts a fear over everything else in the world. And the Gemara tells us that the radiance of Odom HaRishon was the greatest, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him himself. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra where one of the great sages went into the cave of Machpelah, and he saw Adam HaRishon, and he said that the two heels of his feet had such a light that it was as great as the ball of the sun. The heels are the end of the person. The greatest light is found on the face of the person. Chokhmas Adam Teir Ponav. This was the radiance of Adam HaRishon. And the Gemara tells us that the radiance of Yaakov, that was the most perfect man, he had a radiance like Adam HaRishon, like the first man. And therefore his image was hewed out on the throne of the Almighty. And the Gemara tells us, Kiven shenitzrach ha'odem lebriyais nishtane ponav. Once a person has to come on to beg to another person, he has to beg for money, Rachmona Litzlan, or he has to ask for a loan, we see that his face grows pale. He loses the radiance. Why? Because he's not a king then. When you come on to others, you lose your kingship. And that's why the Gemara says, Hamal bin espanei chaveiroi, if you embarrass a person to the point where you cause his face to grow pale, that's kesheifet domin. Then that's like spilling blood. Because you have destroyed that image from him. Our problem is we don't understand what shvichas domin, what loss of life is, because we don't understand what life is. All of these discussions that you hear in the world, should the criminal go free or not? Should we let him off? Should we parole him? Abortions, suicides, wars, road accidents. That's all because we don't know what life is. And the Torah knew what life was. Physically, a man has more miracles. If you speak to medical doctors, physically a man has more miracles. In one gland, which is perhaps the size of a fingernail, than all of the wisdom of the greatest men of creation. It's been said that one part of the brain contains a greater communication system than all of the communication systems of the world put together. And the miracle is how it can be packed into something which is perhaps the size of a fingernail. That's physically. What about the spiritual side of man that we cannot examine through a microscope? Therefore the Torah said, Shefech damo odom, he who destroys man, domi yishofech, he shall be put to death. Ki betzelem elekim osu esa odom, because I have made man in my image. Now when we view the world, we see there's a great distinction by the world. Wars, the First World War, the Second World War, the wars fought under the Tsar, the war of Vietnam, that nobody knows how many people were killed. Nobody cared how many people were killed. This society of violence that we live in, the terrorism, the abortions, and so on and so on, you see that the culture that we live in today is totally contrary to that value of the Torah. Let me conclude with one little story, which I've mentioned here in the past. There was once someone who wanted to become frum, he wanted to become Shemer Shabbos, and he was an actor. He had a problem. He figured out he could act on Shabbos because he wouldn't do anything wrong, but how would he put his makeup on Shabbos? So he was wondering if he could have a goy put the makeup on. So he wrote to Shaila the question to the great Gaon Ramesha Feinstein. So Ramesha Feinstein wrote him back. He answered him. He answered his questions. But then at the end of the letter he said, I don't really know if you want to be frum, why you can be an actor? He says, in my opinion, this is totally contradictory. Because Hollywood and Broadway, what it represents, now of all of the decadence that Hollywood and Broadway represents, he only mentioned one thing. He said, because Haim Eisim Schaik Im Ha'ovena Hamura B'chol HaTeira, they make scoffing and they make a joke out of the greatest transgression in the Torah, that of murder. So how can you place yourself in such a culture and expect to be a Fruma Jew? This is what he wrote. Now if you view us, you take a person who wants some relaxation, so he sits down and watches television and he sees a few murders. If he wants to watch sport, he sees people injuring each other. Goes to a movie and he sees violence. This is all contrary, not only contrary to the Torah, it's contrary to the human being, because the Torah was the blueprint for the human being. And people wonder, they wonder, why are there so many strange, weird crimes going on every day? When we soak up all of this, every book, and every magazine, and every television show, and every movie, is violence and murder, and to us it becomes entertainment, like the gladiators of Rome, which were the Sheif Chedomim, that was Esav al Harbe Chotichya, that lived by the metal. And you know that what this does to the psychic of the human being? Do you know what this does to the emotions of the human being, to the spirit of the human being? And then we wonder why we have so many strange crimes in our society. This is the challenge to the Jew, that he, for his attitudes and for his outlooks, he must look to the Torah. He must not look to alien sources. If he wants to grow straight and upright and healthy, not only spiritually, but physically and emotionally healthy, then the Torah is the derech ki drocheho darkei noham v'chol nesivesehu shalom, that its ways are ways of beauty and its paths are paths of peace.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@yjj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.